Money FM 89.3, the best of your money.
Welcome to Market View. Joining me to break down all the market action this morning is market strategist with IG, Yep Jun Rong. Good morning, Jun Rong. Are you refreshed after the break?
Hi, good morning, Michelle. Yes, for sure I am.
Good to hear. Good to know. Let's start this morning with the world of chip makers and artificial intelligence. Now, have you ever feared that AI would overtake human beings, or do you think that's just science fi? Well, Elon Musk is predicting that superhuman artificial intelligence that is smarter than anyone on the planet could come into existence next year. Yeah, Musk has been talking about this for a while, but he's moved his timeline up considerably. In a live stream interview on his social network, Musk referenced the Terminator movies and said it's, quote, actually important for us to worry about a Terminator future in order to avoid a Terminator future. Musk's prediction about AI's super intelligent capabilities has come with one major caveat, though, that there is sufficient supply of semiconductor chips and enough power to run the AI engines. This is a major concern. A growing chorus of executives, including OpenAI's Sam Altman and Arm's Reen Haas, say that energy constraints could impair growth. Why is this, Jun Rong? How much power is needed?
Yes, I mean, looking at the current trend, you know, revolving around data centers, around artificial intelligence, and of course, around the cryptocurrency sector as well. I think looking at some statistics, you're seeing that electricity consumption from all of these sort of mega trend, electric consumption could actually double by 2026. So just to provide some context, you know, this demand is roughly equivalent to potentially the electricity consumption of the whole of Japan itself. So there's really this call for a greater demand for energy, and without improving the efficiency, the stat says that by the end of the decade, you know, just AI data centers alone could actually consume as much as 20% to 25%. Of a U.S. Power requirement. And today, that's just probably, you know, around less than 4%. Mm. So there is a very strong surge in terms of, you know, power requirement. And I believe that this will keep, demand will keep going IMR, which will require, you know, much huge appetite for efficiency to keep up with this AI trend.
Yeah, on that amount of consumption, the IAEA says that data centers are set to more than double their energy consumption by 2026. And this increase largely due to the power needed to run these generative AI engines. And to put this further into context, the data centers are expected to consume as much electricity as Japan. Is this a reason, Jun Rong, to go out and buy energy stocks?
Yes, I think potentially yes. I mean, this means that looking at this guidance from all of these major CEOs, it suggests that demand for energy will continue to be well supported as economies continue to transit to all of these data centers and AI, and that will help to underpin prices for energy itself. So in a way, companies that own and operate electric power plants, they may potentially benefit from this trend. But of course, we should also understand that this is a multi-year kind of a longer-term trend. I think the impact may only play out over a longer horizon. So of course, near-term, I think price may still be somewhat sensitive to macroeconomic factors along with economic conditions. But overall, I think it's also it's still good to have this form of a tailwind for energy stocks.
Yeah, chip makers and tech executives have all sorts of ideas on how to address this energy gap. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman is betting on a breakthrough in nuclear power. He's invested several hundred million US dollars in a fusion startup. It's called Helion Energy. Microsoft is betting on nuclear energy to power its needs as well. Now, Intel has another idea, design chips that require less energy. What's the latest here, Jun Rong?
Yeah, so we know that the U.S. has always been wanting to bring AI chip production back to its home ground in order to, you know, secure a key supply chain for its growing technology sector. So finally, I think it's bearing fruit. Intel has unveiled its latest AI chip and is kind of looking to compete with the current leader, NVIDIA, and NVIDIA has an estimated, you know, 80% of the AI chip market. So Intel is hoping to grab at least some of that. So they mentioned that their chip is over twice as power efficient as NVIDIA's chips and can run, you know, AI models 1.5 times faster than NVIDIA itself. So of course, they say that the chips will only be available to customers in the third quarter, and they have secured, you know, some customers such as Dell, HP, and even Supermicro itself. Right. But overall, I believe that it may not be a zero-sum game. I believe that, you know, with this growing trend in AI demand, actually all players can actually benefit.
Intel isn't the only tech company to come out with a new chip this week. Speaking of all players, Google is making more powerful chips and custom CPUs. The search giant does not want to be dependent on Intel or NVIDIA. So, Junrong, what do you make of Google's strategy? And does it mean that for ARM, what does this mean? ARM is a company it's partnering with.
Yeah, I think there's this ongoing race for global companies, right? That they want to come up with faster, a better or more efficient products to kind of fend off competition and to grab as much of this market share as possible, especially when the trend is still sort of in its early to mid stage and the demand has a multi-year kind of a horizon in front of them. So I think as the AI boom kind of intensify, you know, Google are also turning to these custom chips that will compete with the likes of Intel and NVIDIA. Of course, it's based on ARM and will be used to support Google's AI workload later this year. So of course, they also mentioned that, you know, these chips will offer 30%, you know, better performance than the general purpose ARM chip. And, you know, it can offer 50% better performance than Intel's existing processor. So in a way, these things are quite powerful. And, you know, I believe that they are implementing it into, you know, this cloud space. They will really strengthen their footing in terms of cloud infrastructure. So with all this innovation in place, I think it may help to fend off a competition for Google. And of course, that may provide some strong demand for ARM's services moving forward.
Well, and on the topic of chip makers, TSMC is posting its fastest revenue growth in almost a year and a half. It grossed more than $6 billion in March. That's nearly 35% better than a year earlier. And of course, we know what's behind the big jump, the AI race. TSMC makes chips for Apple and NVIDIA. Now, TSMC received some more good news this week as well. The Biden administration is giving it more than $11 billion in grants and loans to build a third factory in the U.S. state of Arizona. Two factories already planned there. This third one is new. I want to turn to NVIDIA now. Now, we've talked a lot about this stock. NVIDIA's share price has more than tripled over the past year. But get this, NVIDIA shares are now in a technical correction. It's off 10% from its all-time high. I have to ask, has an NVIDIA bubble burst or is the stock just taking a breather? Junrong, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, with their very strong price performance that we have seen in NVIDIA, I think, of course, the near term, it may call for some profit taking, some form of a correction. But I believe that the overall broader trend may still sort of remain intact. I think looking at its growth momentum, especially its backlog for its chip orders, is likely to continue and sustain its earnings over the coming quarters. So I think near term, there is some jitters over the current Fed rate expectations. But I believe once markets recalibrate the rate expectations, there may still be some buying traction for NVIDIA. Of course, we have some competitors coming in trying to buy for NVIDIA's market share. Mm-hmm. But I believe that the data center AI market, you know, is expected to grow as well. So, you know, in a way, there is room for other competitors to grow alongside NVIDIA. So in a way, I believe it's not a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. I think overall, AI chip companies can continue to grow together.
There's room to grow. Let's segue to broader U.S. markets now. The S&P 500 and Dow Jones Industrial Average both dropped, let's see, about 1% overnight. NASDAQ, not far behind. The catalyst for the sell-off was a stubborn inflation report. After factoring out food and energy, core prices rose 0.4% from February to March. At an annual rate, that's 3.8%, which is well above the Fed's 2% target. Sticky, Junrong, do these latest numbers mean that an interest rate cut in June is now off the table?
Yeah, yesterday, I mean, U.S. consumer prices, not a very pretty number there, higher than expected for the third straight month. So that provides another test for the Fed's inflation tolerance. And with this data, if we look at the current market rate expectations, they are putting off a June rate cut. They are putting it off the table and are pricing for a first rate cut potentially in September instead. So, of course, earlier this month, you know, Fed Chair Jerome Powell continued to downplay concerns about inflation. But yesterday's data will further challenge that and it actually prompt policymakers to kind of reassess policy outlook. I mean, if you look at the super core inflation, which is a measure of inflation that excludes food, energy, and housing. So this component has been closely watched by the Fed. It has been roaring higher lately, you know, up 4.8% year on year. So I believe that this may potentially drive more hawkish rhetorics from policymakers in the upcoming days or even weeks.
Expectations of lower interest rates have been driving Wall Street's gains. The S&P 500 is up nearly 30% over the past 5 months. But now that hopes of lower rates are dimming, companies are likely to face more pressure to deliver on earnings. Now, what are your expectations on this front, Junrong?
Yeah, I mean, for now, the bond yields are rising. We are also looking at a stronger US dollar. So that is not a positive news. For the stock market in general, largely a reaction from markets to price for interest rates to be high for longer. So in a way, it does suggest that with this stellar rally, there may be some near-term cooling and may drive some profit-taking, especially with yesterday's inflation data, which really challenged, you know, whether the disinflation progress may have actually stopped. But overall, you know, I believe the broader upward trend for U.S. equity markets may continue to run. I believe that there may only be two factors that may kind of cause the upward trend to reverse. One is that if you were to see a reversion in the monetary policies to rate hikes, and the second is when we see recessionary factors coming into play at greater scales. For now, both are still sort of out of the picture yet, so that will be something to monitor over the coming months. And talking about U.S. earnings season, I think we are expected to see a further recovery in earnings, kind of the continuation of a trend in second half of last year. So overall, I think things are still rosy on that front. We should see a reinforcement of the stronger than expected U.S. economic data lately, and that should help to push back against recession risk.
If we drill down to some earnings, the U.S. carrier Delta Airlines helped kick off earnings season overnight with some better-than-expected results, bolstering what you just said. Delta says it's seeing strong demand for its flights globally and is reporting its best first quarter ever, at least in terms of revenue. It grossed $12 billion U.S. dollars but had profits of just $37 million. All right, let's turn now to commodities, whose prices have been on a tear of late. We talked about this on the show on Monday. Check out the podcast. We're on Spotify. The playlist you want is Your Money and audio as well. Gold came under a bit of selling pressure overnight after those consumer price numbers were released, but even that couldn't really dent gold's run. The precious metal is trading at record levels, currently above $2,350 an ounce. So what is driving this gold rally, and do you think gold has much more room to run, Junrong?
Yeah, so gold prices has been very sensitive to treasury yields movement and to the US dollar. So having seen, you know, upside on both factors overnight, that kind of pressure gold prices to be slightly lower. But overall, I believe that it is still somewhat sort of a retracement within a broader upward trend. I mean, of course, near-term overbought technical conditions do call for some sort of a cooling in terms of the rally. But I believe that as long as the Fed's next move is still a rate cut, I think the broader trend for gold prices may remain upside bias. And the yellow metal do provide this very good hedge against the geopolitical tension as well. Mm. And we know that tensions could sort of likely, you know, drag on for longer. And looking at the flows, some of the flows into gold ETF, along with positioning in the money managers, it seems that there may still be some room for further catch-up buying to play out, and that could suggest that, you know, all of these could help to underpin the prices moving forward.
Yeah, another metal that is experiencing a real resurgence is copper. It's trading at its highest levels of the year, and analysts at Citi say it's the start of a bull run, what they're calling copper's second bull market in this century. Demand for copper is often seen as a proxy for economic health. So, Junrong, if investors wanted to bank on this trend of rising copper prices, what are some of their options?
Yeah, I mean, looking at copper prices, you know, 17% rally. Of course, what investors can do, there are certain ETF that has exposure to copper, or if not, for those that are more risk-taking, you know, they can sort of turn to CFD to sort of, you know, bet against the rising prices. And of course, looking at the fundamental aspect for copper, I think there are some key catalysts. Mm-hmm. For one, we have a supply shortages in terms of production cuts by miners. We also have a strong demand for copper itself, looking at the stronger than expected economic conditions out of US,
yeah,
and some green shoots in China's economy. So I think those kind of provide a more optimistic outlook on demand. And on the longer term scale, I believe copper is a beneficiary of energy transition.
Right.
I think coming from green sectors itself, the share of global copper demand is on course to double over the next 10 years, looking at some statistics. So overall, there seems to be quite a bit of tailwind for copper.
One more commodities on my note. We talked recently about rising cocoa prices, Junrong. Poor harvests have led the price of cocoa to more than double this year. Well, listener, one chocolate company at least has been unaffected by those rising prices. In fact, its sales are up 11%, and that company is a Swiss business called Barry Callebaut, and it supplies chocolate to some of the biggest names in the business. Pretty resilient. Time now for corporate news, and we do it up or down style. You can join us at home as well. First up, Boeing. Is it up or down in your book, Junrong?
Yeah, I think for Boeing, the trouble just doesn't seem to end. Recently, there's a whistleblower's claim that, you know, the company kind of dismissed safety and quality concerns in the production of its jets. There have also been some, you know, sort of issues coming from this plane as well. Looking at the series of incidents that we have, you know, just over the short span of a few months. So it does take some time, you know, for them to address these issues,
yeah,
and also to really adhere to many of these compliance and regulation that may be set to come for the company. So I believe that, you know, it may potentially drag on their earnings for longer. So I'll give it a down.
I join you there. Boeing just can't get a break on this new whistleblower investigation. That's the latest report in New York Times. Basically, a Boeing engineer has raised concerns about the way in which Boeing's 787 Dreamliner is assembled. And they say sections of the fuselage are being improperly fastened and they could break apart mid-flight after thousands of trips. Now, Boeing denies this and says there is no safety issue. They're definitely a down for Boeing this morning. Okay, this Thursday morning, let's have a cup of coffee, Junrong. Well, how's Starbucks looking?
Yes, so Starbucks has always been, you know, my go-to place for having meetings or, you know, just having a conversation, having catch-up.
Mm.
So kind of a positive news that to see that, you know, yesterday they mentioned that their new and renovated store will sort of have this, you know, feature where it helps to reduce background noises. So overall, I think it's a good development. I think it may not necessarily have a material impact on revenue or earnings, you know, this year, but you actually allowed it, in my view, to be a better go-to place in terms of, you know, having meetups. And overall, the brand loyalty for Starbucks is there. So I think overall, you know, looking at the price action, it has been on an upward trend as well. So overall, I will give it an up.
I will join you. Are you working from home or at the office today?
I'm working from home today.
Okay, I was going to send you a Starbucks coffee, but I guess it'll have to wait, Junrong. All right, next up, let's turn to China and ByteDance.
ByteDance, a very promising number we are seeing. Profit surged roughly 60% through 2023. So that actually outpaced the growth of its online peers, Tencent and even Alibaba. So to me, when I look at this number, it really reflects very strong resilience in its business, especially when we know that China's economic conditions is facing some form of a challenge, and but they are able to sort of deliver this very strong growth. This is the first time that, you know, ByteDance has overtaken Tencent, both in terms of revenue and profit. So clearly it's a leverage into, you know, short video platforms and to expand, you know, internationally has clearly been bearing fruits. And for now, I don't see that the growth momentum may ease anytime soon. I believe that it remains intact, which could be further reflected in upcoming quarter earnings. And therefore, I do give it an up.
All right. Our last entry this morning is Alibaba.
Yeah, so over the past year, we know that Alibaba has underwent, you know, these sweeping management changes to sort of lift its growth momentum back. For now, you know, March is still very much a wait and see. And yet, this week, Jack Ma has kind of resurfaced with sort of an optimistic guidance to the company.
Yeah.
And this marks the second major public statement that it has to employees in just a few months. Mm. Of course, you know, much will still have to be proved in the upcoming months itself. But for now, I'll give it an up just based on its beaten down valuation and its share price seemingly starting to form a base, which suggests that selling pressures may have eased. So much will wait for its results to see whether it can actually deliver.
Yeah, I mean, remember, Jack Ma basically disappeared from public life just a little over 3 years ago. But that's when we saw Alibaba's founder pretty much exit stage left. You might recall China pulled the plug on its Ant Group IPO, listener, and then regulators came down hard on Alibaba and other big tech companies. Well, as Junrong mentioned, he's been seen in public for the first time in months, and he's praising Alibaba's business. I'm going to take that as a bullish sign and join you with that up for Alibaba, Junrong, even though, yes, beaten down share price, down 20% over the past year. For our last word today, let's go to New York City and the checkout line at a Japanese fried chicken restaurant. They're called Sansan. The cashiers are dialing in on Zoom. They're not even in the same continent. Sansan Chicken's New York City cashiers are located in the Philippines. I mean, you've heard of overseas call centers, but imagine an overseas cashier. So what do you think? Going through a checkout line and paying someone who's Zooming in. What do you think of this business model?
Yeah, well, I think it's a very good development. We are seeing that, you know, customer service is now bringing it virtually. So I see it as a potential cost-cutting approach for companies. You know, these companies can actually outsource this cashiering service to other countries, which may, you know, relatively have lower cost of labor, and they can still, you know, sort of get the jobs done. And of course, in terms of businesses, you know, I also foresee that operating hours can be extended as well. I think 24-hour shops will be easier to manage, tapping on these cross-border time differences. Mm. And that may actually translate to, you know, higher revenue and also profit for many of these companies.
Innovation, hey, on many fronts. Junrong, always a joy to speak with you. Thank you for joining us this Thursday morning.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.